Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is May 1st, 2015. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Susan has just released her third book, focusing on her personal experiences with forgiveness and A Course in Miracles. It's called Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. As you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. One of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website, and on the side of the page, you'll see, like on the left side, there's a column. Click that chat button, and you will be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. And if you're not already a member, just hit the button to join and come on in. Now, many of you I know are familiar with Susan Dugan, and you may be even have read her other two books. They're called Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want. As you can tell, forgiveness is Susan's thing, which is great because it's one of the things we really need to do in this life. She is the co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. Welcome back, Susan.
Thank you, C.A. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I'm so excited about your new book, and thank you so much for sending me a copy. I am really having a good time reading this book, and, you know, it's just so interesting to me after reading the other two. It's just a natural progression, and I can just really see kind of your spiritual path as I'm reading this book.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think I've noticed that, too. When I was editing the essays at, for this last book, as I do, you know, have done, because they're all collections of these essays that I have written over the years in my practice with the Course. You know, each book is different and sort of emphasizes a couple of, you know, different themes, but also represents a deepening of my, I think, both intellectual understanding of the Course, but especially my experiential, you know, my experience of the Course. And so this book, I definitely takes it a lot deeper, takes it to a different level in the sense that I'm, you know, and brings me, I think, up against my resistance in a different way. And the Course itself talks to us about our resistance to returning to love, our resistance to awakening. Because, you know, again, there's a part of us that is terribly frightened of what, where this Course is leading us, which is away from the body that we think we are and back to a mind that's outside time and space and the dream of individual lives that we think we're living, and back into this perfect undifferentiated union with God that's all loving. And really everything we want, and yet, you know, what is that? We've forgotten what that reality is like. And so it's you know, the fact that it's unknown and our fear that we've offended it, destroyed it, is so unconsciously, you know, enormous, and the guilt over that is so enormous that we just, you know, we have this really profoundly deep resistance to doing what the Course is asking us, even though a part of us recognizes that this is really all we ever wanted. And so, you know, we have this very ambivalent quality to our experience. And I think this book very much reflects my ambivalence to wanting to do this. And, you know, I think one thing that Ken Wapnick always talked about, and I have understood more and more over the years as I've been willing to practice this unique forgiveness of what never, of the separation between us that never was, is that we have to begin to develop we will develop over time, hopefully, a real humility, in the sense that, you know, when we come to the Course, we recognize that this maybe is the answer to everything that we're seeking. But we also kind of think that we can just muscle through it and get it and you know, instantly awaken, and pretty soon we come up against the awareness that's really not the case, because there's this unconscious part of us that's fighting very hard against it. And so we really do need this new inner teacher, the Holy Spirit, Jesus, this symbol of an ego-free presence in our mind. We need to work with that presence and become a willing and increasingly willing student, and increasingly willing to admit that our way isn't working again and again, you know, and every time it seems to arise, and every time we want to have it our way, we want to have our judgments and our grievances, and we want to point a finger at external circumstances and people and situations, you know, and blame others for our internal whatever anxiety, you know, sadness, unrest, whatever. And so you know, the humility that's being asked is to say, you know, I really don't know my own best interests in any situation, and you know, that's not something that the ego takes takes really lightly. And so a lot of the times we find ourselves really, at, you know, literally feeling at war with ourselves. And yet the, you know, as we go further and further more deeply with this, the more we can invite in that, and that's not even the right way to describe it really, but it's the only way I know how to remember that presence of, you know, I happen to use the symbol of Jesus as our older brother that the Course uses. But that ego-free presence, that non-judgmental presence that loves everyone equally, that's always available to us, that presence that doesn't take any of this seriously, that knows that nothing anyone of us has ever done has changed God's love for us or could. And, you know, we need to have that presence kind of firmly in our awareness somewhere, even when we're feeling enormous conflict and discontent, especially when we're feeling enormous conflict and discontent, you know, to just remember that that love is still there. And just because, you know, I seem unable to take that hand right at this moment, that proverbial hand of my older brother, of my inner teacher, you know, doesn't mean that the hand isn't always extended patiently. And that Jesus is, you know, is still there, not judging me, simply waiting until my fear subsides. And you know, I can resume the journey as soon as that happens. But, you know, we don't fight ourselves. We just accept that part of the, you know, that there's going to be some dark times with this because to the ego, it means death, literally. And, you know, that's not true, but we believe it a lot of the time.
Well, and along those lines, one of the essays that you have in the book is called Hell No, I Won't Go. And of course, as I was reading through the book, I haven't read every single essay yet, but I've read a lot of them. And so I had to read that one just because
and
of
you
the
were drawn
title.
Immediately to that.
I was drawn immediately to that. Well, and especially because in the very beginning of the book, there's a review that actually says something like, let's see, what does it say? It says, there's no doubt in my mind that Susan Dugan is going to burn to a crisp in hell for this book. And so, you know, I was expecting there was going to be some interesting stuff, but in this one essay, Hello or Hell No, I Won't Go, that one, it also, I don't want to say it caught me off guard exactly, but I thought that was a really, it was very thought provoking because you're talking about what it's like to be interacting with the ego and to almost kind of stop doing the fight. And what Susan does in this particular essay is she describes the ego as sort of this ornery little kid and how that, you know, they're not going to agree with you and they're just going to scream and fight. They're not going to logic anything out. And so how she kind of metaphorically, or however you want to say it, in some kind of you know, alternate reality, she makes, you know, a grilled cheese sandwich and, you know, some tomato soup, and they sit on the couch together just chatting. And, you know, it's like calming that ego down and not trying to fight it, but just recognizing what it's really afraid of and what it really wants, and knowing that we're wasting our energy fighting the ego. And I thought, you know, that was like a really refreshing little essay.
Well, thank you. You know, yeah, now I know the essay that you're talking about. And I really did picture the ego as a frightened little boy. I, you know, I had to blame it on another gender, I guess.
Yeah.
But, and I had two younger brothers, so it was easy. That's an easy image for me. But but as soon as I could, because fighting it doesn't work, as you were saying, and as soon as I could picture, you know, I this bratty, you know, 5-6 year old child stomping around having a temper tantrum, And you know, kind of the vulnerability of that child in all of us. Like, you know, I saw it in myself. I could connect with it in myself. It's what workbook lesson 182 talks about, that the child within us all that is, you know, that walks this earth frightened and alone, feeling like we can never find our way home, and that nagging awareness that we all feel that we're not welcome back into the kingdom. You know, we've been cast out, and you know, we're doomed to life alone. And so, you know, everybody here is suffering from that same wounded, erroneous, but nonetheless really excruciating feeling. And so as soon as I was able to connect with that image, what it did for me was allow me to be compassionate with myself, I guess, you know, compassionate with the ego in everyone, which is, you know, because I could recognize that I have that same ego too. And this is actually my ego. Of course, what we're, you know, the outward, whatever we're picturing outside is always a reflection of that inward condition of guilt in the mind over mistakenly believing that we really pulled off this separation from God. So that bratty little kid, and I think I had him in a, you know, dressed up in a Halloween costume or a superhero costume or something, which is a very apt metaphor too. Mm-hmm. Ego's really impersonating, you know, trying to impersonate this mighty figure. And yet on some level knows it's just a child, you know, and knows that it can't, however, and the Course uses those metaphors all the time. However much we want to play make-believe, you know, we can't make it real. We can't make this real. And so it was wonderful to, you know, make the soup for the little boy and for me and, you know, share the grilled cheese sandwich and just recognize that, you know, we kind of need to just have that self-compassion that this is coming. You know, my ego meltdown, my refusal to take Jesus's hand is coming from enormous fear, and it's not going to help the fear to subside by fighting it and calling it names, you know.
Yes.
And getting into the sandbox, as Ken used to say. Really, we are taking Jesus's hand when we refuse to judge it and instead extend compassion either to our another seeming brother or to ourselves, because we're projections of that same ego thought system too, and you know, we share the same fear and we share the same solution to that fear.
Right. And see, and I think that's why maybe that one kind of stood out in my mind, because when we talk about forgiveness, even though the Course continually tells us this is about forgiving yourself, we think of it in terms of forgiving other people. You know, we just go back to that all the time of forgiving somebody else for what we think that they have done. And in this essay, you bring it right back to where this is total compassion for ourselves. And just, it, once again, not fighting yourself, not judging yourself, but just saying, yeah, this is who I am. I'm this frightened little kid, and I need to just take my own hand and just be okay and be with this. And then, I mean, and you even, you know, made a remark, and there was Jesus standing in the corner, and you said, I didn't even notice him come in, and he was just smiling.
Right.
You know? So, and that's one thing I tell the audience. Susan just has this incredible ability in her writing to both explain and to entertain and to create these visuals that are just so much fun to read. They really, I mean, I find myself laughing out loud when I read your books, although this book is more what I would consider more serious or more mature. And when I say mature, I don't want that to be a judgment, but I can just really see the evolution in your spiritual practice and in your forgiveness practice in the essays in this book compared to the other two. But it still has all the humor and all the fun that the previous two books had.
Well, thank you. That's a really nice compliment. You know, I think that really we're being asked to grow up with this Course. We're being asked by practicing it, you know. I mean, eventually it does become, we're so familiar with and sensitive to the pain of choosing the ego and also our ego attacks that we do begin to see that, you know, the solution is always the same. I mean, that's the generalizing that the Course talks about. And you know, there isn't, I think we can't wallow in it as long, although the pain of when we've chosen the ego as our teacher, and when we're having one of those meltdowns in which we find ourselves, you know, just crazy angry or something with a special relationship, which this book really gets into a lot, you know, very deeply into the special relationship, the special hate relationship. I think that, the reason that the Course spends so much time on that subject is because, you know, that's where we've dug in our heels. Our identity is so invested in, you know, in letting ourselves off the hook for this guilt that we feel internally, because we have this person that's the foil, you know, that's always thwarting us, that we are you know, the people in our lives that we just habitually love to point a finger at for all of the things that are wrong in our lives. And so I think that maturing with the Course, you know, is inevitable as you practice this, because you really begin to see, you know, this isn't about them. This really isn't about them. This really is, you know, I must feel so guilty that I can't seem to stop blaming them for all the drama and conflict in my life. And if I'm really honest with myself, I think you become increasingly honest with this practice. You know, I have to realize that the drama and conflict in my life has always been there. It has nothing to do with when this person entered, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was there before. You know, this world is about, the reason that we're here is to act out drama and the drama and conflict of the ego thought system itself. And so, you know, I think we growing up with the Course means beginning to say, well, you know, there I go again. And in every circumstance, it's always the same cause. And then to begin to remember that even though I, you know, my resistance seems pretty formidable right now. And you know, we tend to really judge ourselves as we've been doing this a while by saying, well, you know, we hear the ego saying, well, you're not getting anywhere with this. And, you know, there's not enough time in the hologram for me to get these lessons. And, you know, I'll never be able to give up my judgment in this special relationship and so forth. All of that negative self-talk, you know, sometimes we just can't judge our own progress. We really need to step back and stop and entertain the possibility that, you know, maybe there's a lot of healing happening in the background right now that I'm just not aware of, you know, and
mm-hmm.
that my resistance is actually showing me that I really have been. And the truth is, this book also talks a lot about things like politics. the presidential election was just gearing up in some of the essays for this book. And well, it had been gearing up and then actually happened while I was writing this book. So that was an arena that for me, so much healing had happened in, because in my earlier life, I was a very, very political person and an extremely self-righteous one, I might add, my opinions. And really, you know, really saw an entire like other side, 50% of the American population as wrong. And also, and you know, wrong was probably the nicest way I would have put it in my earlier days. I was really, you know, I mean, I felt that they just were, you know, uncaring, unfeeling idiots, you know? I mean, that was where I was coming from. And so the Course has very much transformed my, I still have opinions. It hasn't changed my political opinions of, you know, what I support and so forth, but it definitely has changed the way I view the quote unquote other side, because again, I see in them the same fear, you know, however it's presenting, whatever we think makes us safe, whatever story we've concocted, that seems to be necessary for us, for our way to prevail, it's still coming from that same little child we were just talking about. It's still coming from the same ego thought system, fearful ego thought system we share. And we still share, all have the same purpose and the same direction that we really need and want to go. And that is home to the mind. That's the only place that's going to, you know, that's the only place that safety really abides. And everybody actually has made it there. So to continue to hold 50% of the population, you know, exclude them from this, you know, quite early on, that almost seemed to, when I would reach for that muscle that was had been so familiar, that knee-jerk reaction, it just was being disabled through this practice. And, you know, so those are the kinds of things that we are making a lot of progress. It's just that we still, you know, we're not awake yet. We're not at the top of the ladder. And our special relationships are the places that, you know, even though we sometimes will feel like we've let it go, they seem to recur. Here it is again. You know, why is this still happening? Why am I still in this situation with, and still find, you know, still really believing that this person's behavior is the problem? Well, I mean, you know, the Course gives us the reason. It's because we don't want to let go of, you know, the identification with the story of me, that story that I really do exist, but it's not my fault. And, you know, we need those special relationships to blame it on so that we can be relatively more innocent. And, you know, so it's going to take, we work with them. That's why we continue to work with them. And those are the long-term relationships the Course talks about in the manual that we, you know, that actually are going to be, you know, are the most healing for us, because once we really have let go of our attraction to guilt in those relationships, or allowed the letting go, the undoing, through this practice of you know, looking at them with Jesus as our reactions to the others, to these people, seem to arise, that over time that's being undone, that guilt that's there, and eventually, you know, we reach for that muscle and it won't be there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I just went off on a complete tangent, but
No, I like it, because, you know, I'll tell you what I was really thinking. And once again, I really feel this in this book, and maybe, you know, it's a combination of your evolution. Maybe it's a combination of where I am with the Course too, but it feels that, you know, and once again, mention politics, and boy, I'm right there to raise my sword, right? That's what it feels like, you know, like, let's get out the armor and charge into battle. And what you just said, like the attraction to guilt, well, it's also the attraction to the conflict. It feels good to feel self-righteous. But what I'm feeling in my own life, and what I feel in this book, is what we used to, when we would raise that sword and go rushing into battle, into those conflicts, we still thought it felt really, really good. And the longer we practice the Course, the longer we practice forgiveness, it's harder to even kid ourselves and say, oh yeah, grab the sword, this is going to be fun. Because all of a sudden, it's like, it doesn't feel like it's fun anymore. And the truth is, it never was, but to the ego, it was. Because we somehow always held out that we could win the battle, that there were us and them, and that there was a separation, and that somehow we could emerge as a victor. But it just feels to me anymore, those same kinds of things that I used to think gave me satisfaction, gave me that sense of being, you know, on top, or being the victor, or being smarter or more evolved, or whatever it was, all of a sudden they just, like I said, I feel myself picking up the sword and it just feels like a dead weight.
Absolutely. That's a great point. Yes, the resistance was always there.
Yeah.
You know, we're here because of our resistance to laughing at the tiny mad idea that we could be severed from our source. But it used to serve, our judgments used to serve as at least a temporary release for that buildup of guilt in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we felt this adrenaline rush at, you know, being unfairly treated. I mean, we just love to be unfairly treated. But what the Course's practice of forgiveness, of paying, you know, beginning to pay very careful moment to moment attention to our reactions and question, raise to doubt the cause, you know, that the cause is not what we think it is. It's not in them. And, you know, that it is, it's a reflection of this guilt that I'm making real in my mind. That practice, and you know, that I first decided to throw that piece away to reinforce this whole belief of separation, that very practice becomes painful. You know, we recognize that, wow, this is not this is ugly what I'm doing. I don't enjoy this. You know, this is not really serving, this is only, and it doesn't work. It's a maladaptive solution, as Ken Wapnick put it, because it only serves to keep that guilt circulating. It's a very, very temporary release valve. And the time lag between, you know, the glee we feel over being right, mm-hmm. and the guilt seeming to boomerang back to us, collapses. And so there, we don't have much time that it feels good. There's not, for me, it doesn't even feel like there's any time anymore where it feels good. It just feels painful. It feels painful. Mainly painful when I recognize it, and I recognize that I could choose peace, but I don't want to choose peace.
Mm-hmm.
I think I do. I say those words in my mind, but I don't always return to it, and so that tells me that there's something going on, and that's my resistance to love. You know, that's our resistance to returning to love, and that's what we need to. You know, that's what I think this book is about: learning, because I'm still learning. I'm not always gentle with myself by any means, but I'm learning that even when I can't be gentle with myself, I can entertain the possibility that there's something else going on here, and that again, that Jesus is still there. You know, that he's still that symbol of the non-judgmental presence that loves me regardless of all of these, you know, crazy crazy meltdowns. It's still there, and you know that hand is still extended, and I can and just reminding myself of that, it just somehow takes the edge off, you know. It
can't, mm-hmm.
And plus we know that Jesus says in the Course itself, he teaches by, you know, his whole motivation that he's trying to instill in his students comes from us beginning to, you know, that's part of this process, beginning to see that. When I choose the ego as my teacher, when I choose to blame others for, you know, to believe that someone or something outside my mind has the power to take my peace away, it hurts. And that if I choose him as my teacher, I will return to peace. And we learn that from actually practicing it. And so we do, you know, the contrast between that peace in which we have this enormous relief that and really do have that holy instant, at least instant, when we experience that, I'm not guilty and neither are you. You know, it's this enormous freedom and recognition that's really what I'm looking for. That's what I've been looking for all my life. You know, we have that contrast between those instants and when we're digging in our heels and you know, it's that pain that's going to eventually have us let it go in more and more situations until we're ready to let it go in every situation. I mean, this course is a gentle process in the sense that it's not asking us to do it all at once. Jesus knows we're too fearful to just open our eyes or, you know, be hurled into heaven, as the course says. It's not going to do that. It will be, you know, when we will open our eyes, will open of themselves to the abstract union of our true nature when all of the fear and guilt has been undone through the practice. So we don't have to worry about that. You know, and along the way, we'll have whole areas of that used to be such, you know, such arenas for our battleground of guilt, like the whole political arena. You know, we'll begin to transform. I mean, that's one example, but you know, other. I mean, many many things that used to upset us just naturally kind of through this practice, it does begin to generalize of itself.
Well, and just like you even mentioned heaven, the tagline for this show is "Why wait for heaven?" And what that, I mean, that is, it's so symbolic to me, and it's just so rich and powerful. But once again, it's like the gap between, oh, I want heaven, I want peace of mind, just not now. And right. What this book really demonstrated to me is, and it just so resonated, is that gap between I want that but not now is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, because now I'm more aware of the pain that sits in that gap, that it's not all fun and games to not be in that place, to not be in the peace of mind. And why am I waiting? Why? What am I waiting for?
Right, right, exactly. And it's that. You know, and the trick is to try to not judge ourselves, because sometimes we do wait. You know, I mean, we must not be willing to choose, because we stay in the pain. And it seems longer. I mean, I think it is much shorter, but it can seem longer because it's more painful, you know, when you're experiencing that. Again, we're more sensitive to what it really feels like, what we really think we're doing. You know, we really think we're destroying love every time we reenact this, and that's very painful. We had dissociated that, we had projected that outward, and we're so effective with our projections that we thought it was everybody else's problem, but we're now beginning to see that no, wait a minute, you know. I have to take 100% responsibility for what I'm feeling. And, you know, that's why we need a teacher, because if we try to do that alone, that's devastating. You know, the self-judgment is just because we take it seriously. We think it's real, and we need to have a presence. We need to invoke in a way that presence in the mind that's really a part of us, but we still don't know it for sure. That knows unequivocally that nothing really happened. That, you know, again, that they're, you're not really guilty. They're not really guilty. Nothing happened. You know, nothing you've ever done has damaged what you are, the love that you are. This is all just a bad dream. And you know, we will awaken. But you know, it's really just silly. From the Holy Spirit, Jesus's perspective. And that's why in this book, like in the other ones, when I have conversations with Jesus, they're really monologues. He doesn't have a lot to say. He's usually playing with some toy or on my desk, or, you know, he's just listening and smiling, and because he doesn't take it seriously. He goes along with us. He meets us in the condition we think we're in, but he doesn't reinforce it. He doesn't engage it. He'll never agree with our point of view. Thank God, you know, because it's not real. And we need that part of our mind to lean on that knows that completely, knows, you know, entertains no illusions. And will never indulge us in that sense. But he will indulge us, you know, again, since time is a trick of the egos, there's not really a rush on this. We feel like there is, and you know, we are told that you know, delay will hurt us now, but it's only because we become more and more sensitive again to that pain. So but it's not good or bad. It's not, you know, we're not sinful because we're delaying. We're just fearful. And the more we can just remember that and that compassion, and, you know, kind of just invoke that compassionate part of our mind, then you know, it just gets easier in a way, because we're used to it. You know, we know, okay, well, there I go again. Ken used to say, well, there you go again. You know, don't worry about it. It doesn't mean anything, you know, and don't try to attribute meaning to it. It's just, you know, you became afraid. It's always the same meaning. And, you know, again, that there's a lot going on in the background. We're aware of so little, we know so little about this, and our understanding is completely insignificant. We can't understand heaven, and we don't really understand how we got here. So really all we have to do, as the workbook says, is what, you know, is forgive. It's just do what I'm asking you to do, raise to doubt what the cause of what you think is the problem again and again, and look at it with me and, you know, recognize that there is a choice for peace. The peace that still abides in your mind. And that will help, you know, you will find it of your own by just doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, like when you mentioned pain, I was thinking you did, there were a couple of really interesting essays in this book about your being very vulnerable and talking about physical pain in your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I read through those, and like I said, I applaud you because you were very vulnerable to just put that out there and share it. But even talking about it, bringing it right back to the course of how so often, and I'm not saying this is a cause and effect, but it's so easy for us to see ourselves as being in pain or to be angry and frustrated and thinking that we're somehow punishing somebody else in the process of doing this, that somehow it's somebody else's fault that we're feeling this way, or that, you know, there's just all these psychological things that go along with that, that somehow I'm in pain because of something you did to me, and see how much pain I'm in. This is your fault. You know?
Definitely. And the Course says that we do that. You know, we're always pointing a finger, whether we're attacking the body we think we are or another body, we're always pointing a finger at someone, at the reason we're doing that, you know? And most of the time when we're ill, we're pointing a finger. It serves a purpose. And it serves a purpose to distance ourselves from others. It serves a purpose to say, you know, look how poorly you've treated me. Look at the migraine. I mean, you know, just to use a small example you just gave me.
Right.
or look at, you know, yeah, or the, you know, the stomach. I think I was going through I have had a lot of stomach issues that I've endured. See, I was about to say that. So again, it's that feeling of, you know, all this stress in my life, which, you know, the stress usually comes from other people or situations that seem beyond our control. so, you know, that's the cause. And I mean, in the dream, in the 2 + 2 = 4 world that Ken talked about, yeah, that's exactly what we believe. That makes total sense. You know, look at all that. I mean, we're asked to, when we are ill, you know, well, look at all the stresses you in your life and try to eliminate them. And, you know, try to be around positive people. Try to, you know, we try to manipulate our environment to make it stress-free. And there's, you know, but ultimately, and maybe that's not a bad idea, but ultimately that's not the problem. You know, I mean, that's, it isn't out there. The problem is in my decision, again, it's coming from this guilt in my mind that I'm not aware of. And I feel so guilty that I think that, you know, I have to reinforce this ego thought system that someone loses and someone gains. And the real, what I'm not aware of is that the biggest victim, you know, wins in the ego's thought system.
Right.
I mean, that's why we all end in death. You know, we all end up as victims. And then at the end of our lives, we can say, well, you know, maybe I wasn't the most stellar person in the world, but man, look at my co-stars, you know?
That's right. I was better than them.
Yeah. And look at what a horrible life I had and what a rough life I had. So what could you expect? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it takes that honesty of just saying, you know, that's not the cause. I mean, really questioning it. And our physical pain is the same as our psychological. We're always trying to point a finger at someone or something out there, or point a finger at our childhood, or point a finger at the environment, you know, maybe the environment, maybe the government for what they're allowing the environment to do. You know, we come up with some really good ideas about what the cause is in form, but, you know, if there is no form, maybe we could entertain the possibility that there's another cause. You know?
That's right. Well, and I just love the way that you wrote those particular essays too, because it wasn't from the perspective of if I could change myself or if I could be a better person, this pain would go away, but just processing through the pain.
Right.
You know, just processing through it and continuing to choose the inner teacher of kindness, Jesus, as your teacher, you know, and just trying to be aware, just being with it and being aware. You know, it was, like I said, it was very moving. I wanted to kind of reach out and go, did you try this? Did you try this? You know, I wanted to fix it for you, Susan.
Right. Well, but, you know, it is, we don't really, again, we don't know what's in our own best interest, and we don't know.
Right.
You know, the Course is asking us, you know, we don't know that feeling, if I was suddenly cured of whatever seemed to be going on, you know, to the ego, that would be some sort of triumph. The Course isn't saying that there's any relationship to form. And so it may be in our best interest, if our goal is healing our mind, to be, we've given this in the dream, we can give it the purpose of healing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, being able to, it's a huge lesson to be able to recognize that what my body is doing, what does that have to do with me? You know, with what I really am. You know, pain is, if, I mean, there's a lesson that says, if pain is real, God is not. And so it isn't that we're not doing things in form to, you know, I mean, whatever magic would be kind in form. It isn't asking us to deny our body, and it particularly warns us against doing that. And so, you know, I was certainly doing, and I always do whatever, you know, I happen to like Chinese medicine, and I always try that. because it's worked for me, but things, magic works for different people because we believe in it, you know,
right.
And it could be medical things that work for you. So it doesn't matter what the form is. It's not a hierarchy of magic, but while you're treating whatever seems to be going on, you know, that's, again, to be recognizing that's not the problem. The problem is that, you know, this illness doesn't have the power to take my peace away. And so if you can work with your inner teacher on learning that and looking at it with him, what I have found is that it just kind of recedes in importance. And so it doesn't become, again, that, you know, the foreground of your life in living what the Course is asking us to do, which is this new kind of forgiveness, becomes forgiving, becomes working at the level of the mind. And then as Ken would say, these whatever's happening in form kind of begins to recede into the background a little. You don't take it quite as seriously. You use it as a classroom, just like any psychological pain you would use as a classroom. You use our relationships are a classroom. They're our curriculum, and so you know again, it's not how it turns out in form that is the point of this. The point is healing my mind, and I don't know what that's going to look like. And we're warned in the manual not to look to form for evidence of outer healing. It's
right.
It's not what this is about, you know. So so we're trying to, when those things come up in our lives, as they come up in every life. I mean, you know, nobody has a, and that's the other trick of the ego is always to you know, this huge hierarchy of, well, yeah, but, you know, this is bad, but look at all the, how much horrible it could be, you know, so I don't have it so bad. Well, you know, it's pain is pain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no real, there's no real hierarchy of it. It's whatever, we don't know why or what we've chosen in our scripts, but we know that if we want to awaken, we have two choices in every situation, whatever. On some level, I've chosen this outside the mind. I've chosen to review this variation in what separation might look like in the ego thought system. And so, you know, it's useless to try to figure that out. That's beyond our comprehension. But what is useful, if my goal is to awaken from this dream instead of rooting myself more deeply in it, is to use it as a learning situation. And we have all the, you know, all the power of heaven, so to speak, will rush to our aid, or I forget what the quote is in the Course about that. But you know, we have all the support in the world. We can't fail to reach the truth and to heal our mind and awaken from the pain eventually if we just practice this.
Right. Well, and what I love about the books that I would want to emphasize to the audience as well is I hope that you have read some of them or that you will read some of them, because what I like about it is I tend to be very much in my head. You know, I just stay up in my head so much. And as I read these essays, which the book is, you know, all three of her books are full of short essays, 2.5 pages. And she's just talking, she lets you into her life. You know, it's like I'm sitting right there with her in her living room or in your office as you're writing. And I see a real person grappling with real issues in their life. And like I said, you're very vulnerable. I think you're much more vulnerable in your writing than you ever are when you're speaking.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It must be kind of an introverted kind of thing, because it's like you let people into kind of the inner sanctum of your thoughts or your heart when you write these essays. And it's like, I get to see, how did you deal with this situation or what did you come up with? And I also like the fact that you also then bring back in some of the course material. Like you'll say, yeah, this reminds me of lesson number 56. And so you give a few lines of the course along with it. So as a person's reading, it kind of takes them right back into the course material too, but it also gives them, you know, a real life experience of walking through something with somebody and watching a course student and a course teacher really grapple with these things and how you turn to the inner teacher. How does it work in real time? How does it work in real life?
Well, thank you. I mean, that's what I
want to do.
What I want to do, I guess. I mean, I don't, you know, I think I don't consciously do that, but that's what I hope they will offer. And it is, I am vulnerable. I'm very honest, I mean, as honest as you're willing to be when you know that you're publishing something. So, but yes, I try to be really just when I'm writing them, I do, I don't hold back what's going on because, basically it does also help me through the process. A lot of times when we were talking earlier, I was mentioning that I think I use this as a way of connecting to our inner teacher. And often I'm writing from a place where I am stuck or I'm in the middle of something that seems pretty harrowing in my life. And I'm trying to practice forgiveness with it. I'm trying to look at it differently. And I'm trying to, be in some kind of connection, in some kind of communication dialogue with our inner teacher. And again, it's not really a dialogue because he doesn't have much to say. It's more of a monologue, but I have that, I picture him with me, listening, and that helps me in, or come, I bring him along skiing with me. I have one, he skis with me and I take him up to the mountains to a yoga retreat sometimes and things like that. But it is that writing from, the center of the ego storm sometimes, and the writing itself, that dialogue that I get into with him, I write my way out kind of, because I get to the other side and I see it as he sees it. So there's something, and I hope that the reader maybe will, I hope I portray it vividly enough that the reader will also in some way, is right there with me and can relate to the experience because they're pretty ordinary experiences that anybody, I hope they're pretty universal, that the person on the other end will be able to also sort of kind of, have a taste of what that experience is like or relate it to some experience that they've had with the course, which also I think speaks to the idea that we really are all the same, where everybody's really has the same goal. And it is to see that, it is to come to a realization that we go home together or not at all, that we all, again, are have the same goal of returning to the mind, no matter what, how we're acting out our guilt. No matter, there is no hierarchy of students in this, of issues in our lives, to which this cannot, this can be applied to anything that's going on with us at any time. And I hope that opens it, the practice itself has helped me open and become more honest. And I guess I hope that it would help readers too.
Well, I think it does. And in fact, whenever I read one of your books, when I get it, I'm just so excited about it. And so as I told you, I went ahead and I went over to Amazon and I bought some copies of the book because I just thought, oh, so-and-so's going to want to read it and so-and-so's going to want to read it. So I did purchase some copies of the book. And as promised, I am going to give away some of those copies to listeners of the show today. So this is the giveaway for the first six people that email me at ca@cabrooks.com. Just send me a quick email and say, I want Susan's book. I will send you a copy of Susan's book. And I may actually send one or two copies of her previous books as well. But anyway, if you're interested in reading Susan, get over to your email and send me one that says, I want a copy of Susan's book. And like I said, for the first six people who send me an email, I will send you a copy of her book. And I hope that you will really enjoy it. So Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, and thank you, CA.
And thank you for your writing. Thank you for your vulnerability. Thank you for just putting it out there and for sharing this path with all of us.
Thank you. It's really wonderful to talk with you, as always.
Oh, well, thank you. I just love it. And I'm loving the new book, of course, and just being right there with you. So do you have any quick announcements that you want to make before you go today?
I am teaching that we're leading the gathering for people that are in Denver at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center Sunday, so that would be May 3rd. And the center has, for people that are new to the course, is starting to, the School of Reason is beginning to offer introductory, very short, hour long, like a really like crash course, tiny crash course in the metaphysics of the course. So that will be, I'll also be teaching that. And the gathering is at 11. And I believe that that this might be, you know, at 12:45 or something. Like, they can go to the Rocky Mountain Miracle website and find out the exact time on that. But it would be a good thing if anybody, if people are kind of interested in the course, but really, you know, sometimes feel like the metaphysics are over their head, or they're not, you know, they would like to get grounded in that and grounded so that they can maybe attend some of the classes at the Miracle Center that are, you know, geared toward Ken Wapnick's teachings. This would be a great opportunity. And they'll be doing this, you know, if they can't make it May 3rd, they're going to be doing ongoing classes a couple times a month. So, with different teachers. So that would be a great thing for people to do. And as always, you know, I always want to plug the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, in Temecula, California, which was Ken's teaching organization and continues to do a wonderful job teaching his work. There are new classes available over the, on their website. If you go to the Temecula schedule there, and they have classes there outlined through August maybe. So you know, the whole website is a wonderful resource, and those classes are great, and they'll be doing live streaming. So people that can't be there in person, they can sign up to get these, to, you know, to listen, to see these through a streaming process. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. As always, love the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And also, you can find Susan does blog at www.forays, that's FORAYS, in forgiveness.com. So that's all one word, forays in forgiveness.com. So Susan, go ahead.
And the book is available at Amazon, and it's in paperback and Kindle version. So if people want to go to Amazon, they can, the name of the latest book is Forgiveness, The Key to Happiness. And if they Google that with, or go to Amazon and type that in with my name, they'll find the book.
Okay. And I highly encourage it. And I also think if you haven't read her previous books, get a hold of those too, because it's just a wonderful practice and they're easy to read, short little essays that are just delightful. So I think people would really appreciate that. So Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Great. Thank you again.
And thanks to all of our listeners and to everybody in the chat room. Thank you for being here and for making A Course in Miracles part of your day. And thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And remember, you can always find me on Tuesdays for my other show, Simple Tales. You can also find me every Thursday evening teaching astrology basics on 1-2 Academy. And you can find me for personal consultations on 1-2listen.com. But for today, I hope you'll stick around and listen to all the great programming that we have on Fabulous Fridays. There's about 5 minutes before the next show starts, which is The Through Line with Christine Dumouriez. So please stick around. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and with my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.